You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Does it feel like you have seen just a burst of fireflies this summer? I know based on my backyard, the answer is absolutely. Well, 2018 is going down as a firefly boom year, not just here in Michigan, but all across the country. Sarah Lewis is with us now, a professor of evolutionary and behavioral ecology at Tufts University. Sarah, we're wrapping up firefly season here in Michigan. You say this was a particularly bright season this year. Why is that?
It really was. And as you say, it's not just in Michigan, but it's been really all across the country. I have heard from the world of Twitter, that fireflies are really, really doing well in many parts of the country this year. And that's really exciting for me as a firefly scientist. And there's a couple of explanations for this. One is we have to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit and look at some of the science behind the spectacle of fireflies. You willing to take a little trip with me?
Yes, please. Pull back the curtains.
Pull back the curtain. So, one of the things to think about is that there's more than just one kind of firefly. So in the United States, there's more than 150 different kinds of fireflies, different species of fireflies. Around the world, there's about 2,000 different firefly species. And so it's possible that some of these fireflies are just really, really doing well. You know, there's some fireflies that are very common. They're almost like weeds, right? So if you looked at a map of their distribution where they're found, they're like sprinkled like stars across the entire eastern United States. They're everywhere from New York City all the way to the shores of Lake Michigan and beyond up into the Rocky Mountains. There's other fireflies that are rare. And so it's possible that we're seeing like a blossoming of some weedy species of fireflies. It would be a little bit like, you know, looking out over landscape and saying, it's beautiful. It's so green and lush. And then you look more closely and you realize it's all kudzu.
Okay, or crabgrass.
Yeah, crabgrass.
And right? and globally, fireflies have been losing ground, haven't they?
They have, and they've been literally losing ground. So there's a bit of a paradox here. You know, how could fireflies around the world be disappearing when fireflies are doing so well in the United States or in any, you know, local particular area? And I think to resolve this paradox, we really need to kind of look a little bit at firefly, what's going on with firefly biology. So it's possible that they're losing ground overall, and certain firefly species are, in fact, disappearing because their habitat is disappearing. So there are some kinds of fireflies that actually only occur in, like, coastal freshwater wetlands, right? So very, very limited areas, or only at a certain elevation in the Smoky Mountains, or only in along tidal rivers with mangrove trees. So as cities grow, as we build housing developments, the fields, the forests, the marshes, the meadows, the mangroves that these particular fireflies need to survive are disappearing. So some firefly species could be losing ground while other firefly species are taking off.
So very much your weed analogy is great. I mean, it seems like nothing kills crabgrass, so it keeps going. So probably the more hardy, more versatile species, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, and you know, that might be fine. If you really if you think that having, you know, like one species of fireflies around, it's enough. You know, they're still beautiful, right? But if you care about preserving firefly diversity, we might want to think about protecting habitat for all different kinds of fireflies.
And how do we do that?
You know, we've learned so much about the ecology, the behavior, the habitat requirements of fireflies just in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. So all of this knowledge that we've accumulated now can help us say, okay, well, we know that this firefly population here is really, really unique, and it's beautiful. And, you know, it has these characteristics that make it very attractive for, you know, people. There are many firefly tourist sites now because there are very, very unique species of fireflies in the United States and elsewhere. And so if we want to protect these unique species of fireflies, we know what kind of habitat they need, and we can set aside these areas. A lot of them are already in state parks or in national parks, and say, you know, okay, well, we're going to try to maintain this habitat in a way that promotes fireflies. So the other thing to realize about fireflies, and this is kind of novel for a lot of people, is that the silent sparks that we admire so much in our backyards, in our neighborhood parks, they have a backstory. They don't just suddenly blink into existence to light up our summer evenings.
No, because evolutionary biology tells us there has to be some utility to that beacon. So tell us, Sarah, why? What are the biological reasons these fireflies flash?
Can I go in a different direction?
You can.
So what I'd like to mention is that what we're looking at when we see these beautiful displays is just adult fireflies. We're looking at the courtship signals of adult fireflies, and they are just the tip of the firefly iceberg. So what a lot of people don't realize is that in the U.S., fireflies spend between 1 and 2 years in a juvenile stage where they live underground. And these firefly larvae, by the way, they also light up. They are carnivorous, and they feed on snails, on slugs, on earthworms, stuff like that. When they get big enough, they find a place in moist soil or in moss where they metamorphose into the adults we all know and love. So fireflies in every single stage of their lives need moisture to survive. And that makes them really sensitive to rainfall patterns. Not just rainfall during the summer, but rainfall in the spring and in the fall when the larvae are active and are feeding. So one of the reasons that might explain why 2018 is such a great summer for the adult fireflies is that we've had kind of a string of really wet springs, wet falls. We haven't really had a drought in the Midwest for a number of years. As far as I can tell, looking at the U.S. drought maps, the last major drought might have been the summer of 2012 and the spring of 2013. So we've had a string of really, really great conditions for baby fireflies, which promotes adult fireflies, and it's a great circle of life.
That is stunning. So yeah, back up to that. What are the reasons fireflies flash? It's you mentioned adults and babies. Why did nature build that in?
You know, we've been able to trace the evolutionary history of fireflies back through their DNA. And one of the things that we've discovered is that fireflies' light-producing talent, their bioluminescence, first evolved in baby fireflies. So you might kind of wonder, you know, what if baby fireflies need with their lights? You know, they're much too young to be courting or looking for mates. So it turns out that baby fireflies are toxic. They manufacture poisons, toxins in their bodies that make them very distasteful to predators. Like, you know, they live underground, as I mentioned, and so small mammals and birds that might be foraging in the leaf litter or in the topsoil layer will not eat fireflies. They're toxic. And so we think that this firefly light-producing talent first evolved as a warning. It signals to predators, just like bright colors would if they were out in a sunlit place, these bright lights evolved in order to warn predators, I'm toxic, stay away from me, don't eat me. And it was much, much later in evolutionary time that the adult fireflies, some adult fireflies, co-opted those larval lights and turned them into the quick, bright flashes that we now associate with the courtship of fireflies. And indeed, for adult fireflies, that's what they're doing. They're using their flash signals, their bright lights, to signal to each other, you know, I'm a potential mate.
Now, you mentioned toxicity with these babies. So when people are saying, oh, it was so cute, my dog was out chasing around in the yard, what do you say to people about that?
So this is something I've noticed on Twitter is a very common thing. Everybody's cats and dogs are really, really interested in fireflies. And, I've seen a lot of videos of cats chasing fireflies. And what I try to do is to just reply to those people, don't let your cat, it's fine for them to chase them, but don't let your cat or your dog eat fireflies. Or, you know, obviously, don't let your kids eat fireflies. They contain toxins that are really, really bad for you. And, in fact, there have been some reported cases of people feeding fireflies to their pet lizards and, you know, within a day, the lizards dying from what is called firefly toxicosis.
Whoa. Well, there you go. Good warning. Sarah, I saw a quote the great Argentine writer Julio Cortazar wrote of the firefly, and this is what he wrote. One can imagine that every time he lights his belly, this light-bearing bug must feel some inkling of privilege. What does the magic of that firefly tell us about the natural world?
You know, I think fireflies are one of the best ambassadors for Earth's natural magic. And that light-producing talent is such an incredible thing to watch a whole field of fireflies just light up. And, you know, it brings us back to our childhoods. It transforms what looks like an ordinary landscape during the day. You know, it can be a field of soybeans. It can be a backyard. It can look so pedestrian. But at night, when it comes alive with fireflies, it's transformed into something ethereal and otherworldly. They're really, really magical creatures. I think that there's a good reason that fireflies, even though they're insects, and lots of people don't like insects, fireflies are one of the most charismatic animals that we have.
Sarah Lewis is a professor of evolutionary and behavioral ecology at Tufts University. And again, her book is Silent Sparks, The Wondrous World of Fireflies. Sarah, thank you for sharing your love of fireflies with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
On tomorrow's Stateside, the Wayne State University chemistry professor whose firefly fascination started in boyhood.
Certainly was wondering how they did that luminescence and how they were able to flash, which was even more interesting, that they can control that luminescence.
How a 20-year quest to find out exactly what makes fireflies flash led Dr. A. Paul Skop to a discovery that saved lives and turned him into one of Michigan's leading philanthropists. That's tomorrow on Stateside. Stay with us. We'll be right back.